or under individual who is a dependent of the employee for purposes of state income tax law. I want to explain that this clause, which limits this, or other individual who is a dependent of the employee for purposes of state income tax law, is not meant to limit the others. For instance, if it turns out the child is not a dependent, or the spouse isn't a dependent, or the parent or grandparent's not a dependent, they're in, regardless of being a dependent. But then we've got the clause which is meant to include anybody else. And I just wanted to clarify that in case anyone ever argued that, say the child's 22 and is no longer a dependent, but is living in an apartment and the father or mother has to go visit and help take care of him one day. I don't want someone to say, well, he's no longer your dependent. I just wanted to clarify that. Otherwise, I think this incorporates all of the changes which we had discussed before.
Okay. Are there further comments?
On page 2, Mr. Chair, is the this was a compilation of both the Mannix proposal and the, I believe it was the Dash 5 amendments that we passed before. On page 2, it defines sick leave for purposes of schools as absence from duty because the school employs illness or injury or as otherwise provided for by law or provisions of a collective bargaining agreement. This was a problem that they had with the definition of providing any leave, even for parental leave, with and staying within their definition of sick leave. So that is included.
May I comment on that?
Go ahead, Representative Mannix.
I also want to make it clear, though, that we're not, by implication, saying that there has to be paid sick leave for one to care for an ill dependent. That is left up to other provisions of law or collective bargaining agreements. Just in case anybody is ever arguing that, they can read the record or listen to the tape.
Aren't we doing a good job?
Well, I'll tell you, I appreciate the comments, really. Just remember last session, those of you who were here, we now have multiple lawsuits, AG opinions, and everything else flying around.
Just doing boys' jobs.
Okay. We're in good moods today.
Yeah.
I want to take just a minute to read the couple more sections here myself. You've checked.
Do you want me to go through it?
Oh, I don't know. We don't need to go through it. I just want to...
The essence of the bill is that an employee shall be allowed leave without pay to care for an ill dependent. The dependent is defined as Representative Mannix has just spoken to. It also includes and allows an employer to give paid leave if that employer wants to. It prohibits the employer from firing, reprimanding, or otherwise disciplining someone who takes this leave solely because they take this leave. The major change is at one time, if you look down on line 18 of page 1, these says nothing in this section prohibits an employer from allowing a leave to describe in section 1 if a collective bargaining agreement or an employer policy allows more leave. That particular section at one time was only under the area that had a requirement of 20 days. The committee felt that we should allow that to be for the whole section if you could collectively bargain outside of it. So that's been moved down so that it encompasses the whole section.
Representative Johnson.
Could I ask Representative Mannix, line 8, page 1, on that issue of reprimanded or otherwise disciplined, is that a term of art type thing, or are we opening the doors to a dispute by using that language?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative, go ahead, please.
Representative Johnson, I was careful by the use of the term solely here. I will explain that it says an employee shall not be fired, reprimanded, or otherwise disciplined solely because the employee must be absent. The example I would use is otherwise discipline means employee discipline. And there may be an instance where the employer has a policy that you have to call in when you're not going to be at work. You're not going to come in for your shift. And for instance, if you fail to call in, you can be disciplined for failing to call in. You cannot be disciplined for having been home taking care of your child.
Right.
That's the example I would use. Or leaving work. You get a call and you rush off and you don't tell anybody you're leaving work and you leave the machinery running or something, you could be disciplined for that because you failed to advise your supervisor that you had to leave work because of a illness call for a dependent. So I'm just talking about, and we'll make that clear in the record, discipline as to other factors in terms of an employer's reasonable policy.
Good discussion to put on the record.
Mr. Chairman.
President Mannix.
I did notice one technical error in the amendment as drafted. The page 1, line 18, says nothing in this section prohibits an employer from allowing the leave described in subsection 1. Well, we're requiring them to allow that leave. That was meant to say nothing in this section prohibits an employer from allowing more leave than required.
I was wondering about that myself.
Than described.
That's correct.
Or more leave
that
than described.
That should say from allowing more leave instead of the leave.
More leave than described.
Mm-hmm.
If that's all right, I'll make that a friendly amendment.
Max, you want to state that?
On line 18, delete the, insert more, and after leave, insert than. I believe that's right.
Yes.
Okay. 18.
Thank you.
We'll take that as a friendly amendment to your motion, Representative.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Walden.
Could I just ask how we arrived at the 20-day limit on line 16?
I can't answer that.
Where did that?
Does anybody know?
I can explain.
Go ahead, Representative Mannix.
I was figuring that in a normal work month average, there are 22 working days. And so that in a 12-month period, you basically could be gone for almost, I just tried to come up with a round figure, 22 could have been in there too. You could be gone for almost 1 month of work under this law in a 12-month period, which is getting pretty heavy, but I thought was within the range of reason as far as taking care of ill dependents. Because frankly, if an employer does not allow sick leave for this, you might also be taking your vacation. You might also be separately, if you're ill yourself, taking sick leave. You could have someone who's gone two and a half months for a whole 12-month period. So if anything, I thought 20 days is getting pretty generous, but say someone's got three or four kids and the flu bug hits, maybe they need to have that much protection. But that was just an approximation of what's almost a month off work. And by the way, that meant 20 work days, not 20 calendar. It means days that you're scheduled to work, for the record.
All right.
Could we just add after 20 work and just...
I think that's an excellent idea, Representative Johnson.
Representative Johnson suggests on line 16 after 20, add work, insert work. Max, is that... talk to my lawyer here first.
Well, I can't see why an employer would grant leave to somebody who wasn't at work or have to give leave to somebody who wasn't at work.
For the weekend?
Well, if they weren't supposed to be at work, you don't have to grant them any leave, and it wouldn't count.
Mr. Chair.
The employer's the one that's counting, not the employee, right? I mean, I'm not going to, it's not a big deal to me, but
That's why you are a reform and style man, though. Representative Dominey?
It becomes a big issue in every working agreement that I've been involved in, is whether, when you're talking about days off, whether you're talking about working days or you're talking about calendar days. In most contracts, and I know law may be a little different, but in most contracts, working days is a different thing than calendar days. And so I think it might be important to put the word work.
I think so, too.
Representative Johnson?
I think the purpose of all of this gets to be every opportunity we have to leave it clearly in the statutes what we intended so it can't be litigated. I think we're doing a service, and that's the purpose of this.
I think Representative Dominey has a good point in.
I agree with that.
Bargaining laws that is... Okay. We'll add, as another friendly amendment, the word working.
I think working is the correct
working term. Days in line 16 after 20.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Walden.
How does this factor in with parental leave? And I'm thinking in the course of a given year where someone has a newborn child or adopted child.
How many days do they are they allowed unpaid leave under parental leave?
It's 12 weeks.
12 weeks.
So in addition to that 12 weeks, if the child was sick off and on that first year, they could take another 20 days under this bill.
I think you're probably right.
That's
and
correct.
And then sick yes. leave and vacation beyond that.
Uh-huh. If they were sick or they had vacation time accrued, yeah.
What being new to this whole process, what other leaves are out there?
You want to ask people?
It's all over the place, Representative Walden. Some people don't have any. Some
I mean,
people,
in terms of statutes.
Oh, state statutes?
Yeah, that we've, the committee in previous sessions.
I think these, God, I hope I'm not wrong, but parental leave is the only state mandated that I'm aware of.
Mr. Chair, there's also holidays involved in this. And time off. Yeah. You're talking about yeah. what requirements for time off. Some of them are national.
Yeah,
there's National Guard time that you can be away from work and come back to your work. There's
right.
legislative business.
That's right.
well, that's halfway through.
as far as I know, those three would
That'd be one way you could escape.
No, I work for my wife.
It's never been legislator.
don't we all?
Good luck on this committee.
It's possible.
Go ahead, Representative Walden.
The parental leave law affects employers that have more than 25 employees, more than 25 employees.
I believe so.
Employees.
Yes, that's right.
25.
But this would apply to all.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. This is the kinder and gentler nation bill.
Any other comments? Questions? Laverne, we're voting on the Dash 6 amendments as amended. Is there any objection to those? We should do it that way. Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
I move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Mannix moves House Bill 3283. As amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments? I just have one. I appreciate the work of the committee on this bill. It's, I think we started out with something that had some problems, and I think it's a pretty good bill now. Any other comments? Laverne?
Representative Dominey.
Aye.
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative
Hagee.
Aye.
Representative
Mannix.
Aye.
Representative
Walden.
Aye.
Representative
Whitty.
Aye.
Representative
Dirkler. Aye. Chairman Shiprack. Aye. House Bill 3283 is as amended is sent to the floor with a due pass, and Representative Stein will carry the bill. Okay. House Bill 2569. Max, you want to go through this?
Well, I'm looking for the amendment for 2569, and I don't see it. Why don't we...
Want to go to a different one?
Why don't we
here,
go to...
Here it is.
Well, I had them delivered, but I don't see them here on the... I had them delivered yesterday.
Nobody's.
I don't want to do it unless everybody's got it.
I don't... We can do it here.
I
brought my amendments with me, Max.
Well, good for you. Well, I have mine in my file, too.
The only trouble is they're not in here.
You don't... Gene doesn't have it. Would you get me some copies of that? As quickly as you can. You want to go to...
2049?
2049.
Okay. Work session on House Bill 2049.
Mr. Chair, this 2049... has a set of four amendments that come with it. This came out of the PRS subcommittee. And if you don't have them, you should have the dash 1, 2, 3, and 4 amendments. If you'd like me to, I'll go through. It's a fairly long bill that I think I can explain to everyone fairly quickly, and then we can take the amendments.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Woody.
This is the omnibus bill that was required for cleanup from the Public Employees Retirement Board, and we've added a few things along the way.
Okay. We tell us what, Max, you want to walk us through those?
All right. On the second page, actually we're going to the third page, there was some problems with aliens and students being eligible for PERS, and there are, as we understand it, there were some grants that people had to bring people into the country for training and various other things, and if they were eligible for PERS, then the employer had to expend some of that grant money, and they couldn't do as much training and various other things. One of the amendments is also relating to that, to change this language around. It doesn't change the essence of what's happening, but the language is changed around. Down lines 30 through 37 of page 3, there was a movement to take volunteer firefighters out of the system and eligible for a length of service award. PERS asked that be another amendment, take care of that, to remove that bold-faced language and put it back the way it was, mainly because they didn't want to start up these length of service awards. Section on page 4,
stuff
40 through 44 is old language, and we're just clarifying how the increase and decrease in the retirement cost of living adjustment is going to be calculated and put into effect, correct?
Yeah, but it had nothing to do with the method that they're using now, so that we eliminated it.
That's correct. The down in line 29 through 32 of page 5 clarifies that teachers at McLaren and Hillcrest schools and at schools for the deaf and blind are treated the same as other teachers with respect to valuing sick leave for retirement purposes. This is the accruing sick leave and using it at the end when you retire. Let's see, page 7, line 29-30, changes the way the benefit, the timing from the service retirement allowance becoming normally due to within 60 days of the first benefit payment. There's about 5, I think, in here of conforming amendments to do the same thing. Do you want to speak to why that was?
Well, it's kind of what they're doing now again, and we just are going to allow them to do what they're already doing on this.
Page 9, the changes there have to do with conforming amendments at the first benefit payment.
This is all the same thing as what we just talked about. It's what they're, it allows them to do what they're doing.
Page lines 36 through line 40 of page 9 is a deletion of some obsolete language having to do with if you haven't repaid before December 31st, 1953 on a certain item. We figured that they'd have enough time on that one.
Yeah, 30 years, 435 years.
That's enough. Page 10 allows the beneficiary designated under subsection 1 of this section may elect to receive the amount payable and actuarially determined monthly payments for the life of such beneficiary, so long as such, there's a typo there that needs to be cleaned up on line 28, should say as instead of
page 10?
Yes. Line 28.
Should say as.
Should say as such. Monthly payments are at least $30. Yeah. You want to
Well, they can't get payments. They can elect to receive monthly payments that would total to, or that are under $25 per month. They can elect to get that money in a lump sum rather than in a monthly payment if the monthly amount is under $30. They don't want to pay those small amounts in checks, monthly checks, if they can get rid of them in a lump sum. And this allows them to settle on a lump basis rather than make small monthly payments.
Mr. Chairman.
Sam Peden.
Just a point of information. To a computer, what difference does it make if it's 3 cents or $3 million?
Probably nothing, but to the fund, there's handling the mailing part of it and all that. They just want to give them the option. It's not a requirement.
It's cost saving. Sure.
May elect, it says.
It's the handling of it. We did this last session, Representative Woody, on a different type of a payment. I thought we'd, but apparently this is another type.
Continues on page 11.
Continues down on page 11. Okay. We do the same thing, lines 41 through 42. We did change plus the amount on line 41. It says plus the amount payable if, and we took out payable and said if elected under, at the request of the PERS.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Woody.
I hate to jump, but I've got to run to the Speaker's office for a few minutes. Could I explain Amendment Dash 1 really quickly before I go? Then I'll be right back.
Sure.
Dash 1 is an amendment which does the following. And it's a legislature's amendment. Legislators are the only class of people that can retire while still public employees. Senator Roberts is retired currently and receiving his PERS pension and continues the legislature. The state no longer pays for his anything to PERS on his behalf, and he does not participate in any longevity, any time added or anything. He is considered terminated as far as PERS is concerned. He's considered retired, but he can remain a member of the legislative body. And this was done some time back to accommodate those people and allow them to continue to serve and draw their pension. However, there's a glitch in the respect of the ability to continue their State Employee Benefit Board health coverage. A retired state employee within 60 days of their retirement can opt to come into SEBB and pick up their group membership. And we've dealt with that earlier this session. And that also applies to state legislators. So if a state legislator retires, they have 60 days to pick up their SEBB benefits, and then they have to start paying their health insurance premiums when they already get it free. If they don't pick it up within 60 days of the retirement, then they lose it. They don't have the option to pick up their health insurance.
That's because there's no contributions going in. Is that the reason why?
No, the reason why is because the law says you got 60 days from retirement to opt into that health care. And if you don't do it within 60 days of your retirement date, then you don't get it. But if you do it, then you have to start making the payments. That's what the law says. What this amendment says is, in the case of the legislator can postpone the opting in to the end of their legislative time. When they decide to no longer be a legislator anymore, then they have 60 days to opt into the group. It makes no sense to opt in and start paying premiums in a group when you can get it free. That's all the amendment does.
They've been working for some other branch of government, elected.
Well, for instance, we have Senator Roberts, who is a professor at Portland State University, and he retired on a fairly substantial pension.
But he lost his health benefits.
But he's still getting them because in his case, it really doesn't make that much difference because his wife is the Secretary of State, and he's covered under her health plan. But I mean, if a person didn't have a spouse who was a state employee, then and they wanted
to continue to be a member of the SEBB group like any state employee can when they retire, and they wanted to stay in the legislature and retire, it's not possible now unless they pay their premium, which they get as a part of their compensation package. We all get group coverage as a part of our compensation package. It doesn't make sense for any one of us to start paying the premium, right?
Makes sense to me.
I mean, why would you pay the premium for something you get free? And that's what this says, is you don't have to pay the premium until you leave the legislature if you retire while you're in office. That's all it says. It doesn't apply to hardly anybody.
It's a glitch because of the unique nature.
The unique nature of the animal, this solves the glitch and allows legislators to be treated like everyone else.
Mr. Chairman?
Which they not now aren't.
Wait, raise pay. Say, Mannix?
I have a separate question for the subcommittee chairman. Representative Woody, there was a letter I had received from Norbert Barry regarding his concern about the language of page 3 of the bill, and I just passed it on to the subcommittee. It had to do with this subsection 7 about length of service award program for volunteer firefighters. Did you find any problem with the language in the statute? Were these just paper concerns? I just wanted to see if you had a chance to address that.
You go ahead, Max. I've got to run.
Why don't you go see her?
I'm going to go.
There was,
come back as soon as you
there
can.
Was the initial language. There are some problems with entities putting in money for either retirement and or length of service awards, because volunteer firefighters are not deemed employees for the general purpose. This bill was, as you see it in the bill, was to make them eligible for a length of service award. In the meantime, once PERS really looked at it and saw that it might be less than manageable, asked that be returned to the current law. So all that bold-faced language is addressed in an amendment to go out and return to the current language.
Which amendment is that?
It's dash. Three.
Right,
on line 7 of dash 3 says in lines 31 through 38, restore the bracket material and delete the boldface material.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Durfer. Could you have Max tell me what an eligible or what a length of service award is? I'm not familiar with it.
Well, no one is particularly aware of what it is. They were looking for some way to reward volunteer firefighters through the PERS system, and they were looking for a way to do it. It appears that PERS is not comfortable with doing this because it could be expanded into a lot of bookkeeping areas. There's nothing that keeps cities or fire districts from setting up some sort of reward system for their volunteers on their own. They were trying to find a way for a state system to administer it. And PERS, the more they thought about it, the less they liked the idea.
Mr. Chair,
I don't know if that answers your question, but
it confuses me.
Well,
Mr. Chair, what they were looking for, represented therefore, was a way. What the volunteer firefighters were looking for was a way to calculate their time, so that they find a way of getting into the PERS system. Currently, there's no tracking system to say how many years you have of service. And they were wanting to connect this into it to show their years of service, to be able to show what years are qualified under PERS. This doesn't really do it, but the new language wasn't going to do it either. So I don't know, maybe addressed in another legislative assembly, but
yeah, in fact, you may be in the next interim having PERS come in and say take lines 30 through 38 out totally of the law, because volunteer firefighters really, really aren't employees, and you can't kick money into their system or redefine what an employee is, and I don't know if anybody wants to do that.
Independent contractor. <Yeah.
laughs> Maybe the time to do that is take it out right now.
Well, I'm not convinced. They talked about that, but they didn't come up with it, and I'm not comfortable with doing that without more input from them.
believe that volunteer firefighters should become part of the PERS system. When that starts happening, I guess we might as well ask everybody to be able to join.
Well, they haven't, because the board has evidently always found that they, or I don't know if they, I honestly don't know if anybody's
okay,
applied.
We should ask somebody from the board whether they qualify or not, because they want it out if they don't.
Bob Andrews is here if you want to.
Is there a PERS representative?
Yeah, Bob Andrews is here, I think.
Bob?
Morning, Mr. Chair, committee members.
I'm Bob Andrews, PERS, Manager of Membership and Coverage.
You could, would you talk to us about line 30 through 38, page 3, and what that is about?
As best as I can, Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, there was an earlier thought, as had been expressed, of providing some type of a length of service award. Volunteer firefighters in other parts of the law are specifically excluded from definition of employees for any benefit structure. Were the board to ever consider them, they would not be considered as a police and fire classic because they're specifically excluded from that in other parts of the statute. And there was some thought